Hi, everyone. My name is Adam Small.
And I'm Jake Moses.
Welcome to our podcast, The Performer's Pathway,
a podcast adventure to help guide and navigate your musical life and career.
As a prelude to every episode, we'd like to remind our listeners that this podcast is about the other side of the musical coin. One side, which you see a lot at our website, mymusicmasterclass.com, is what to do in the practice room. The other side is how to maximize your talent and skills in the real world, and that's what this podcast is about. Also, if you have a few extra seconds to spare,
which is technically only 3 beats at 60 BPM,
please subscribe to our show on your podcast app of choice and rate us 5 stars. We could really use the help. You can leave a comment about absolutely anything, too. That small act of kindness will really help us expand our audience and continue to create new episodes.
And lastly, word of mouth is always super helpful. So if you like what you hear, please tell the world.
Before we get started here, I want to tell you all about our new monthly guidebook / workbook called The Motivated Musician. It's geared towards serious musicians, and it offers challenges, exercises, professional advice, and more to help keep your career and your musical life on track. Also, as an extra perk, members get exclusive discounts from My Music Masterclass. So if you want to learn more, go to mymusicmasterclass.com and hit the subscribe link in the menu. Anyway, let's get started with the podcast. All right, so today we are here with Jimmy Haslip. And if you don't know him, you should. I mean, Jimmy's a great, great, great guy. He's a great guy, and he's also an amazing musician. I mean, he's played with the Yellow Jackets, Alan Holdsworth, Jeff Lorber, Chaka Khan, Donald Fagen, Anita Baker. He even played with Kiss, and he told a really cool story to me about that. I think it's on your masterclass. But he's also a producer besides being a bass player to the stars, and he's done a lot of stuff, and I know he's continuing to do a lot of stuff even in these uncertain times. So we are super psyched to have you here, Jimmy. I hope you are awake enough after your crazy day.
I'm totally awake. I'm right in the middle of working on a couple of projects right now. But I wanted to hang out with you guys, so I took a break.
Man, well, thanks. If you need to eat during this time, you can just get yourself a sandwich.
I'm just having coffee. I hope you don't mind.
No. Coffee's good.
As long as you'll sleep at some point.
Yeah.
I go to bed late and I'm up early, so it's okay.
So tell everyone what you're doing, because I know that you always have a trillion irons in the fire, and it's interesting. So let's break this down. I know that you're always producing things and playing on things. I know that playing stuff is probably slowed down, the live performance thing, but what are you doing?
Yeah, well, the live performance thing is basically gone, maybe for the rest of the year. I don't know yet. And the last thing I toured with, last group I toured with, was a project that I collaborated with Jeff Lorber and Mike Stern. Mm-hmm. And we made a record together called 11. It came out, I think, last September 2019. And then we toured a bunch in September, November, and December.
Nice.
With two different drummers. First bunch of dates we did with Dennis Chambers. Mm-hmm. And then the last batch we did with Dave Weckl.
Yeah. Can't go wrong with either of those guys.
No, no.
No name, young talent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You guys took a big chance on that one.
And it was totally great because on the record, we used three drummers. We used Vinnie Colaiuta, Gary Novak, and Dave Weckl. So
yeah, there you go.
So that was a fun project, and we were looking forward to doing a bunch of touring this summer. But
yeah, man.
And there's something still on the books for the fall, but I had another pretty extensive tour lined up for September, October. Mm-hmm. With Osnoy right. Trio with Keith Carlock. Mm-hmm. And that's been canceled for now.
Yeah, man.
Or I'll be more optimistic about it. It's been postponed. So
yeah,
maybe we can get to it in 2021 if things open up.
So I want to get into all the things that you do, but I first want to ask you, because in a normal day, if this wasn't, you know, quarantine here, you'd be touring all the time, and you've been doing that a long time. I mean, you've been touring since what, like the, I would say
mid-70s.
Mid-70s, right. Yeah. And you must have some tips at this point, right? You got something. You got some tricks up your sleeve. I mean, how do you, what do you do? Sleep standing up?
Well, I drink a lot of coffee when I'm on the road to keep the motor running. But, at this point in time, you know, I'm not a young guy. So, health is important. Really, since I left the Yellow Jackets in 2012, I cut the touring schedule in half.
Oh, they were doing that many dates at that point. Wow.
Well, they were adding a large portion of the touring every year. So every year I tour maybe 4 months out of the year with the Jackets.
Right.
And then there would be other things. So I would end up touring with maybe two or three other bands on top of that.
Yeah.
And that would bring me to close to 9 months on the road.
Jesus, guy. Yeah, that's
and
crazy.
I did that for a long time, on and off for a long, long time. And when I left the Jackets in 2012, that 4 months of touring went away. Mm-hmm. And then I also stopped really working with a lot of other things. And I just said to myself, I'll go out with Jeff Lorber.
Right.
Because I've been producing his records with him. Mm-hmm. We've been co-producing. In fact, I now co-produced 7 of his Jeff Lorber Fusion records.
Was that 11 your, was that your title? Was that one of your titles? 11?
No, I think Mike came up with that.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, we were hanging out and he, you know, it was based on obviously the Spinal Tap thing. It was right. To turn it up to 11. But also at the time we actually had 11 tracks that we were working on. So, you know, it sort of worked in that sense as well. Funny enough, when the record was finished and we delivered it to Concord Records, they decided to use one of the songs as a bonus track. So the record now titled 11 only had 10 tracks.
All right.
Which became the brunt of a joke when we were on the road. Mike said he couldn't count.
Well, he's a guitar player. Too much.
Which went over well. The audience liked that. It's funny. Mike has a great sense of humor.
No, he always does. So,
and that's another thing to have when you're touring extensively. You got to have a sense of humor.
Right. And it's good to be around people that also have a sense of humor.
Yeah. And uplifting situation.
Right.
You know, working with those guys was always great. Dennis Chambers is great. Mm-hmm. Weckl's great.
And you were out with Alan Holdsworth for a while before he passed. And I know that you were great friends with him.
On and off for 10 years, I worked with Alan. And at first, it was the first thing I did was a quartet with Alan Pasqua, which was I felt like I was in a dream or something because I had seen that band. This was many years before that. 1976, I guess, or actually before that, 73. I think it was 73. I was visiting my parents out in Long Island. A friend of mine called me and said, hey, Tony Williams is playing at this club in Roslyn, Long Island. It's called My Father's Place. That was the name of the club. So I love Tony Williams. You know, love all his work with Miles Davis. So I thought, well, this should be interesting. So we got tickets and we went. And there was this band with this guy on guitar.
Yeah.
A keyboard player and a bass player and Tony. And they start playing and it's mind-blowing. And it was the music from Believe It. And the guitar player was Alan Holdsworth. And the keyboard player was a very young Alan Pasqua, just out of Berklee School of Music.
That's crazy.
But I was so blown away by the band, I went back a second night, saw them again. And then I went to Sam Goody's, which was the record shop.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
In my parents'
I worked at Sam Goody. Yeah.
Really?
That was my first job.
Yeah, nice. Me too.
Yeah.
I worked at the Sam Goody's at the Walt Whitman Shopping Mall in Huntington, Long Island.
I was in Jersey, but yeah, it's a similar vibe.
Really crazy. So I went to Sam Goody's. The record hadn't come out yet, so you could order it, you know, or hold, tell them to hold one. So when it came in, they called. I went down there, picked it up, and that's a really cool record. It still holds water today, I think.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion. But, okay, so years later, I'm playing with Tommy Bolin, and we end up opening for that band. So it's like, okay.
Exactly.
And, yeah. Deja vu. So all over again. So, but that
was
time,
the same. It was exactly the same personnel at that point.
Alan Pasqua, Tony Newton on bass.
Sure.
And Alan Holsworth on guitar.
Didn't Tony have that big yellow drum set at that point, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, big rock set.
Yeah.
And he was totally killing.
Yeah, he's Tony Williams.
Yeah.
Moving the stage.
You'd expect nothing
exactly.
less.
Exactly.
So I did get to meet Alan Pasqua then, and Alan lived in L.A., so we hooked up when we got back to L.A. And then many years later, so that's like 1976. So in the meantime, I had run across Alan Holsworth a few times. We sort of met, like ran into each other like at a NAMM show or something like that. And just kind of said hello. And I stayed in touch with Alan Pasqua. I did some gigs with him. Even did one of his records. He did a record for a small company called Cryptogramophone. The record was called The Antisocial Club. And
it's pretty funny.
It's a really cool record, I think. Alan wrote some beautiful songs and really some cool people on the record. We hooked up a few times, and then at one point in 2002, this is many years later after meeting these guys, Alan calls me out of the blue and says, doing a tour with Alan Holsworth, it's a tribute to Tony Williams' new lifetime.
Oh, wow.
And are you available? There was a bass player and a drummer that were going to do it, and something happened, they were unavailable, so I'm calling you to see if you could come in and do this. And I said, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I cleared out my calendar and I did some rehearsals over at Alan's place, Alan Pasqua's place over here. And we learned all these tunes that, you know, I said Fred and Protocosmos.
Sure.
And, Red Alert was another one.
Yeah.
So, again, it was kind of like a...
It's running first full circle, kind of, right?
Yeah, I ran full circle. And then we did a big tour in Europe for about 4 or 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Came back from that. Fun. We did some more touring. Then we did a live gig at Yoshi's. Then Chad hooked up this whole thing where we filmed. And we ended up doing a DVD.
Nice.
And so that's a live.
Oh, was Wackerman on that gig?
Yes, and Chad Wackerman was on the gig. So
yeah. Another great
and I knew Chad. I'd done some other things with Chad.
I saw Holdsworth in the I think it was 1990, maybe 90 or 91. He was with Jimmy Johnson and Chad Wackerman, I think, at that time, right?
That's my favorite rhythm section. Although right behind that is Gary Novak and Dave Carpenter. So
can't go wrong with these guys. I'm saying.
Can't go wrong with either of those rhythm sections. So, and I thank goodness for both of those rhythm sections, because I had to do a quick study on a lot of this music, and I definitely referred to earlier performances by those trios.
Right.
And it really helped me understand some of the music, because it's pretty abstract.
It's like, understand what the heck is going on, you know what I mean? Especially if we talked about this, maybe it's in the masterclass or it might have been off camera. When you know, Alan says take a solo, it's not a normal form. You kind of have to think it over because of the chords aren't incredibly
not normal
diatonically functional.
No. He had a very unique way of writing music, He had a unique of playing the instrument. He was just completely a unique entity.
He just came up with that stuff, and it's just, it's brilliant, and it's his own. It really is just, I don't know where he got it from, you know?
He changed the instrument.
Did he ever tell you where he got it from? Like where he, what he, no?
It just came to him.
Yeah.
It was a natural.
It's like in a dream.
It was just his natural way of expressing himself.
It's and beautiful.
Well, the only thing I could add to that, and I even talked to him about it, but he didn't feel that it was much of an influence, but I still think it had some impact on how he approached the guitar. And that was that I think one of his earlier instruments was the violin.
Mm.
And if you think about that, especially in his solos.
Yeah, the legato.
It's very legato. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you could almost hear him bowing the notes.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably had that all up here in his head, you know, that sound.
Yeah. Doesn't account for the harmonic part.
Yeah, well, then the harmonic part, which in some, you know, the way I started hearing him after playing with him for a while, I could hear that he had a lot of influence from modern classical music.
Oh, I can see that.
And you can kind of relate some of that to an educator named Nicholas Leninsky.
For sure. Yeah, the patterns and scales.
Patterns and scales, mm-hmm. and the way that things were superimposed in increments, like mm-hmm. even increments, like sevenths going up.
It makes sense. I mean, Coltrane was really into that too.
He might have been touching on that, but it was still a very unique expression. So
yeah.
Whatever he took from that, he just opened up another door in his heart, and all this other stuff just came out in a very natural form that would be impossible really to emulate, you know.
Yeah. Maybe, I think that's why it's so enjoyable to watch, because it's so natural. Like, you just look at him play this stuff and it's like unbelievable. It's beautiful. It's beautiful just watch. Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times after a concert people came up to me and said, well, I just watched your concert and I'm a guitar player and I was watching Alan and I have no clue what he was doing.
It's because so out, you know, it has nothing to do. It's not as if, you know, a lot of people have emulated or studied Jimi Hendrix, Buddy Guy, or like Albert King, you know, B.B. King, things like that. And you could feel that. You can, if someone has Albert King bends, you can say, oh, he's got it, like Stevie Ray Vaughan. He's like, you could tell he checked out Albert King.
Yeah. Or maybe even Jeff Beck.
Right. Or Jaco. Yeah. Jaco was one of those guys where you can tell that someone has a percentage of Jaco in their playing just because of how they're playing on the back pickup and adding ghost notes, you know. But
we should talk to this guy. We should do a podcast with this guy in Germany.
Who's that?
His name is Jürgen Attig.
Okay.
Attig. I got him on a project I was producing for this Italian composer. Mm-hmm. And I got him to agree to do a remake of Three Views of a Secret.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, are you going to play bass? And I said, well, you know, I could, I guess, but I think I'm going to hire this guy that I met online named Jürgen Attig. He sounds like Jaco. So I think it would be appropriate to get him on this track and make it more of like a tribute to him, you know? And I contacted Jürgen, and Jürgen was all into it, and he did an incredible job.
Cool.
It's on a record called Variations of Relevance. It came out earlier this year, around January. It's on the Blue Canoe label, which is a label I'm A&Ring. So I'll put a little plug in for that.
I like that name.
I've been A&Ring this label for almost 2.5 years or more.
Is that your only A&R position from this label, or do you?
I think so. It's a small label. Mm-hmm. So I became their A&R guy. Also, I look around for stuff too. So I find stuff and bring it over there.
Oh, I see.
And also the CEO does A&R. he has his people that he hears and sees and gets contacts for things. So between the two of us, we bring projects to the label, and you know, it's a cool little situation.
That's great.
Honored to be a part of that.
Man, I mean, we've talked off camera and off podcast about some of your Jocko stories, because I know you hung with him for a bit, and they're amazing, but I don't know if you're comfortable saying them on this. If not, I'll edit this entire section out. But if you have any that you can say, they're pretty cool.
You know, I do. I think I've mentioned this a number of times in interviews, but I'm always on my, what's always on my mind was the fact that, you know, in life, it's really wild how things, there's connections. So all these connections with things. And I've had my share of very interesting connections, and I don't take them for granted. And I, you know, they're just things that happened.
Right.
But when I first met Jocko, we just happened to be in the same rehearsal hall. We were being managed by the same management house. And it was, I had no clue that he had joined Weather Report. I didn't know who he was or anything. And I was a huge fan of Weather Report.
Right. When Alfonso Johnson was playing, right?
I thought it was Alfonso that was going to be rehearsing in this room. So I went over to the room to peek in the door and see what was going on. And at that time, there was just some people setting up gear. So nothing, no, there was no music yet. So I left, and I figured I'd come back to the room later to see what was going on. At one point, I went out to get a cup of coffee in the hall, and I heard music. So I said, oh, good, they're playing, you know. So I snuck in. It was a private rehearsal hall anyway. So if anybody was in any of the rooms, they belong there. They were supposed to be there.
Yeah, like SIR or something.
I wasn't afraid I was going to get kicked out or anything, but of course I wanted to be like a fly on the wall, you know, and just creep in and sit down and listen. So when I walked in, I saw this guy with long hair playing bass, and it was unbelievable. So I just went, whoa, how did this happen?
Yeah, where did that come from?
Yeah, so I left there after a little while because I didn't want to be distracting in any way, and I left. I didn't want to wear out my welcome, so to speak. So I left, and I waited. When my rehearsal was done, I waited in this hallway to see when these guys would come out. Finally, they did. They all came out. So I just walked right up to Jocko, and I said, I don't know who you are, but you sound incredible, and do you give lessons?
Right.
And he said, yeah, I'll give you a lesson. And he said, and then he just said, are you hungry? And I said, yeah, I guess I could eat. And he goes, come on, we're going to go get some food. So I jumped in a car with Jocko and Alex Acuna, and we went to a Mexican restaurant and ordered a bunch of food. And we were just kind of talking about things. They were talking about Weather Report tunes, and they asked me a few questions. And then at one point, Jocko put headphones on my head and said, I just finished my first solo record. Check it out. You know, something like that. And he had a little Walkman, and he pressed play. And the first thing I heard was Donna Lee. So I just kind of shook my head and went, I never heard anything quite like this. And from that point, we finished our meal. And again, this was all such a big coincidence, because I met him, then I'm having dinner with him. Then they drive over to the hotel they were staying. And I happened to be living in a house that was two blocks from the hotel.
Oh, wow.
And I was just house sitting. So it wasn't even my place. It was a friend of mine who was the keyboard player and Joe Walsh's Barnstorm.
Mm-hmm.
And they went out on the road, and he asked me if I was interested to house sit his place for a couple of months while he was on the road. And it just happened to be a couple of blocks from the hotel where Jocko was staying. So I was hanging with him till like 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, just talking about music and playing a little bit and watching him play. And then he'd watch me play and we'd talk. And then I'd just say, you know, I got to pack it in. I got another thing I got to do tomorrow, but maybe we could catch up tomorrow. And he'd say, yeah, no problem. And then I would be dragging my ass home and he would put on some shorts and he'd go out and he'd jog. He said he jogged like 2 or 3 miles a day in the morning.
Energy, man.
So he had tons of energy and he was on fire. And that was at that time. So I hung with him for like a good solid week, just about on and off, you know, going to his hotel room, seeing him at the rehearsal hall. That was kind of like an explosion for me as a musician to meet him and spend some time with him. And of course, when he left to go out on the road, I figured, well, let me start really practicing here. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing that happened to me was I got a gig to go on the road for about 6 weeks with Flora Purim and Ayerto.
Right.
And just so happened that we opened for Weather Report for a bunch of gigs. So I ended up seeing Jocko on the road.
That makes sense because of the Ayerto connection.
Right.
So what are you doing all day now that you're in quarantine? I know that you produce a ton of stuff. Is that what you're mainly doing at home, or are you recording bass on other people's music as well?
Yeah, so about 70% of what I'm doing now is everything from production coordination, graphics. I'm consulting with graphics art for packages and for promotion. Mm-hmm. Helping with finding images, helping with, you know, just some promotional items for things that I've finished or getting close to finishing. Then there's the projects that I'm in the middle of. And with that, I'm sending out files to various people around the world. I'm also doing some, I'm playing on some of it. So I'm overdubbing. I have a small workstation here at the house. Mm-hmm. It's Universal Audio Gear. So I'm using their software, their DAW, so to speak.
Right. I see.
It's a universal audio software. It's called Luna, which I got some tutoring on from a great engineer that I'm working with a lot, Rich Breen. And he noticed that whoever is developing this software has a lot of influence from Pro Tools. So I felt like, okay, I'll jump on this because it's pretty user-friendly and simple. And it got me up and running within like 10 days or so. I was already doing overdubs. And you know, I still had to learn a few things, but I'm getting better at it every day. So somewhere around the middle of March, I had about 35 tunes to play on from various outside projects.
It's good to be busy.
It was a lot of stuff that just came in.
It's like
it was
the title of your memoirs, somewhere in the middle of March.
Yeah. And that's and that's when we started talking about doing a new work.
A new masterclass video,
yeah.
In the middle of the storm.
I was trying to sort all that out and then also trying to figure out some sort of curriculum for this, which I had some ideas, but once I thought I had the idea I wanted to work on, then I had to actually do some research because you know how that is. You say, okay, I'm going to talk about this, and then you get into it and then you go, yeah, well, how do I do all that? You know? So then you got to go inside and study.
Explaining is hard. You don't want to half explain something.
Yeah, and go, this is, I do this.
Yeah. There's five notes here. I don't know.
Here's here's a six note pattern, and I do this. No, it got deeper than that, and then of course I failed miserably filming all that in many ways, but I did learn something, so that's always good.
We're going to get to that. For the people listening, we're going to get to that. It's going to be awesome.
Okay. But in the middle of that, I was doing bass overdubs on basically seven different outside records and a couple of records that I was producing.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. So around mid-March, I started like a half a dozen productions, and I was already finishing another half a dozen projects. So I had some that were going to the completion, and some that were just beginning or even sort of started. So there was a whole array of things to deal with, you know, from like contacting musicians. That's all coordination stuff, you know, talking to guys, they're talking about fees. Making, you know, talking to the artist or the band to, get the budget all straightened out and to explain to the artist or the band, you know, what your intentions are with the budget, how you're going to use the budget, people that you're thinking about and having discussions about that. Cause obviously an artist or a band, they'll have their own take on what they would like to do. So I have to listen and gather all that information and then see if there's anything missing or if there's anything I want to change, anything that I'd like to change, not that I will change it, because I won't change anything without the consent of the artist or the band. That comes first. I'll make suggestions. I'll have ideas, alternative ideas for things, but I'll just pose them and in a discussion and see if they either like it, want to pursue that, or if they're not wanting to do that and only do things that they want to implement. And then I'm fine with all of it. I have no ego about any of that. I just want the music to be right and I want the artist to be happy. So,
I mean, there's an underlying thread here, I think, with your career, and you kind of just went into it when you said how you're approaching the artist and dealing with people. I mean, you're really good with people. You're a friendly person and you have friends and people like you and they want to be around you. And how, I know this is just a compliment. I'm just going to keep complimenting you.
I appreciate that.
No, but there's a point to it. So how important do you think that is weighed on your ability as a musician? I don't know. I don't know if I phrased that the right way, but like if you had a ratio, you know what I'm saying? Like, you actually, obviously you're a talented musician. You play with a lot of people, but you're also incredibly likable and you're able to get across your vision and what you're talking about in this production world and also as a sideman. And how important is it to have a positive attitude and be likable?
Well, I think it's very important in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, and it all boils down to being a team player.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone gravitates towards team players. I was always like that. I basically learned all that kind of stuff. It wasn't even learning it. It just came natural, but I was put into positions where that natural ability just grew, mm-hmm. you know, because I played a ton of sports when I was in school, and you got to be a team player, right?
Yeah, you do.
If you're on a basketball court, if you're on a football field, if you're on a track team, where all, you know, everybody contributes to the final score, and the more points you get yourself for your events, the better chances your team has to win the track meet. So you're always trying to do your best. I think my family had a lot to do with my demeanor, is that they were always very kind. My family's very kind and thoughtful and always willing to help people. My dad was always helping people. My grandfather as well. So that's all like maybe some genetic kind of thing that's part of who I am. But with that and, you know, playing five sports every year from like seventh grade to 12th grade. And I even played sports after that, you know, like I was on a softball league when I was in college. I played in a summer lacrosse league when I was in college. All that added all this information about working with people, getting along with people, helping people. And, you know, those attributes don't change with any, you know, there's the same types of things that you can use as a producer when you're working with a band or an artist or a group of session musicians or, you know, talking to record execs or whatever it is, you know.
Yeah.
Being on stage in a band, which I was on stage with one band for 32 years. So,
yeah, you better get along.
And look, sometimes things happen and you're going to have a rub and that, you know, maybe people are going to get pissed off at one another, but there's even a way to deal with that, you know, and that's if you respect the people you're with, if they get pissed off at you about something you did, then you have to take that and say, okay, I get it. And maybe it boils down to an apology for something that you did that you shouldn't have done. Maybe it's a place to have a discussion to work it out, you know, to say, I don't think I was wrong here, but I get what you're saying. So let's find the middle ground here and let's work together on this, you know?
Yeah.
So all those things are important, I think. And those kinds of ways of dealing with situations and with people and things, I think, can open a lot of doors and point to a successful relationship and making music. And music is the most important thing, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
That's why I say, I don't have ego about it. I don't have to have my way all the time. But let's figure out how the best way to make the best music here. And that's what I always try to do. And even sometimes I don't think I'm the right bass player for something I'm producing. So I'm happy to hire another bass player. You know, it gives me joy to call another bass player and say, I need you to play on all these tunes.
Yeah, that's selfless, you know, and it's that kind of seeing the bigger picture and being a bigger person. I would imagine that that's opened a lot of doors for you and kept you busy in a time where there's a very, very talented people not working right now.
Yeah. And I find myself, you know, with all these projects to work on and, you know, it makes my day to wake. You said, what do? I wake up in the morning. It's quarantine. First thing is cup of coffee.
I'm right there with you. I know Jake.
And, you know, then you take care of all your other things, shower and all that. Then I before I go to bed at night, I make a list. Since I'm home, I figure, okay, let me make a list of what I need to do tomorrow when I wake up. So I actually write out a handwritten list and I put it on my desk. So when I wake up and I'm having my coffee, I can look, okay, I got to call these three people. I have to follow up on this piece of artwork. I have to send files to this guitar player. I have to do a podcast with.
Yeah, you wrote this down. That I feel
Adam
good
and
about
Jake.
That now. I made the pen. I made the pencil
list. I actually had it on my list, I knew I wouldn't forget. But I put it on there with a little star next to it.
Oh man, with a star, Jake. We made the list.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so I do that. I make lists, and then I try to accomplish everything on the list during the course of the day until I run out of gas.
Right. Do the best you can.
Yeah, because at certain points, sometimes depends. Like yesterday, something happened that you know, came out of the blue. It wasn't on my list, but I had to take care of it. My dog kept shaking his head, and I thought maybe he had like a little ear infection or something.
Yeah.
So I took a break. I picked up my dog. I called the vet. I got a emergency little appointment. I got him over to the vet. I said, yes, he has an ear infection. So they flushed out his ear and they put some medication in it. And I paid him and I drove home. So that took a few hours out of my day.
How did you fit the mask on your dog and the vest?
They were like, has this dog been listening to jazz?
He has. That's what's going on.
So your dog's okay? He's not on medicine or anything like that? Or
no, they just did. They said it was a minor little ear infection. So they put some medicine in his ear. They said it would clear up in 24 to 48 hours. So.
Poor little guy.
Yeah, he'll be better in no time.
I bet he's still guarding that door, though.
He is.
He's a pricey little fella.
Yeah, Jake's seen my dog. Yeah, he's a little Maltese.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just to wrap this one thing up, I'm producing right now 12 records. I've been working on over 6 or 7 outside projects, and I've been consulting in at least another half dozen projects that I'm not producing, but I'm just trying to help with a variety of things, from promotion to, you know, trying to find a home, maybe a deal. Try to help people, you know, with artwork, all kinds of stuff. So,
man. So when you do consulting, is that something that you do? Is it something you're doing for friends and to help, or is it something that you hire yourself out to do?
No, I do it all on a friendship basis.
Right.
So I got a call from a very close friend who was working on a tune for a project, just overdubbing some guitar, and they were looking for a really good singer. So we, in talking to him, we came up with trying to get Bobby Caldwell to sing this tune.
That'd be good.
Who I worked with. I worked with Bobby. I hadn't talked to him in a while, so I called. I got Bobby's number. I called him. I proposed this project to him. He seemed interested. I got him a track the other day. He loves the track.
Nice.
And he's going to sing on it.
That's awesome.
Man. I have nothing else to do. I was just a messenger. So.
No, but that's an important thing. I mean, again, this goes back to being a people person. You have a lot of connections and, you know, people don't hang up the phone when you call. It's important.
Yeah. For the most part.
Do people do that to you, Adam?
Maybe an ex-girlfriend might hang up. I don't know.
Hopefully not.
No. No, but do you do any exercise or anything like that to keep your mind sharp, meditation, anything like that? Or are you just drinking coffee and going?
Well, I'm drinking a lot of coffee and going, but I try to meditate every once in a while. That helps to calm the stress level, and I walk a lot now. I was going to gyms and doing that stuff, but gyms are closed. And,
right.
So every once in a while, I get down and do 20. You know, so my coach used to get mad at us, and he'd make us do 20 push-ups when he got mad. So I'll just do it on my own, self-quarantined push-ups. So it's kind of keeps a little bit of the blood flowing, and do some isometrics. And that's, you know, it's very light exercise. But at my age, I think from what I've read, if I get in at least a half hour, 40 minutes of exercise a day, it'll be okay.
Yeah, you're going to be 49 next year, right?
plus 20. 49 plus...
Hey man, you look great. you look great, man. And
I'm hanging in there for a 68-year-old guy. Yeah, so that's also, I think part of that is maybe some genetics. A friend of mine's wife actually chimed in at one point. She said, "Jimmy should stop using hair dye." She said, "My hair is really black, you know." I said, "But I don't use hair dye. This is the real color of my hair. And you can see I have gray
It's a little bit. It's just a hint of gray. It's highlights.
Yeah, it's just a hint. And my
mom, more than you.
My mom didn't get gray hair till she was like 92 or something. You know, then all of a sudden she got gray hair. So I don't know. It's some kind of weird genetic thing.
It's working.
Although you can see here, there's no problem. There's plenty of gray here. This area.
That's just so you don't get carded at the liquor store. You know, you need a little bit.
Those are wisdom.
No, I don't think I'll be getting carded at any time. And actually, bars are closed anyway.
That's true.
So that's okay. Yeah,
they'll take anyone when they open.
Yeah. So we just stay at home. You know, I miss hanging with people, and I miss doing sessions. Jeff Lorber lives pretty close to me, and I'm always used to driving up there, and he's got a state of the art studio.
We've been up there. We filmed at his place.
It's fantastic.
He's got a great studio.
That's where we did all these seven productions. We did them all right there at JHL.
Exactly. Yeah, JHL. Yeah. You know, we could do this all night, but I know you have a lot of stuff to do. I just want to ask
It's okay.
One more.
Tell me when you're done with me, and because I can continue on. There's a lot of things we could talk about, but we could do this again too. You know,
it's up to you. But I mean, I would definitely ask. If you have any advice for musicians right now, I mean, it's tough with the state of what's going on, being in your house, not knowing what's going to happen, an uncertain future of live music. What would you say?
Well, one thing, I thought a little bit about this because it's something that I'm doing, and that is, you know, I had nothing here to record in February. And I just started thinking, this is getting weird, and maybe I should really consider getting a little workstation together so I can at least do some recording here in the house. And that led me to getting a new laptop. I didn't get a brand new one. I got a refurbished laptop.
Nice. Yeah, those are always fine, though.
Yeah, they're great. And Rich Breen recommended me doing that. And there's a piano player that I worked with, and I really dig him. He's very helpful and knows a lot about computers. It's a guy named Scott Wilkie. Mm-hmm. He's a piano player. I associate produced his last record, which is a record of all Brazilian music. That's basically, it's just called Brazil. It's the name of the record.
That works. It was a good movie by Terry Gilliam as well.
Yeah. That is.
Yeah.
That's a great movie.
Robert De Niro. Just totally wacky. Yeah, it's just so out.
So both of those guys really helped me to figure out a way to get a little workstation here. And then the CEO of Blue Canoe Records is a bass player. And he had this Universal Audio stuff, and he directed me towards that. So between those three guys, I got my little workstation together, which is, it's just a Mac laptop with a Universal Audio interface called an Arrow, which is their little, it's a little guy.
That's all I need.
Yeah, but those UAD things, those plugins they make are really good. I mean, they make a nice, I think they had a Neve clone or a Pultec or something I liked, and it did sound good.
They have a bunch of that stuff.
Yeah.
I think that they even have maybe some API.
Totally.
Yep.
And they do good plugins. They do good work. They definitely do good work.
It even comes with a Ampeg SVT amp sound in there, which I don't endorse, so I don't use it. So.
But you can endorse the fake one, you know?
Yeah, I can. I was trying to get Trickfish to come up with an app. You must be familiar with Trickfish, or maybe not.
Sure.
I like their gear. So anyway, I got a little workstation together. So my idea was for any musician to look at that as a potential future thing to do to help them during this crazy time. Get yourself a designated laptop with an interface. You can get the bigger one if you have if you're a keyboard player. If you need to get some good mics, if you want to mic a piano, or if you're a vocalist, get a good mic if you don't already have one, and definitely get a synth or something that you could use to write with. And bottom line, if you're not getting a inundated with session work, write music. I mean, why not? And then look for avenues to plug the music. Could be a sound library, could be a music library.
It could be friends doing videos, and they
could
need,
be friends doing
most
videos.
Most people that do videos, they don't want to go through libraries. It's, you know, it's hard. They don't know how to do a lot of that stuff.
That's right. There's some things to do on that along those lines. That's my advice. And also, once you get involved with, you know, recording yourself and everything, if you're not an engineer, you'll start getting good at that. So you're improving a skill of something to do with music that can come in handy for you in the very near future. So,
do you practice any other instruments at home?
Just a little bit of keyboards, but I'm horrible.
I
was the worst piano player in the Yellow Jackets.
Well, not worse than Russ Ronde. That
yes,
guy's terrible.
Much worse than him. But I was also worse than Bob Mincer.
Bob can play pretty well.
Bob can play.
He's good. And I was even worse than Mark Russo, who was in the band. He was better than me.
Yeah, because I was going to say it's okay to be worse than Russell, you know?
Yeah. And I was also...
He would probably argue against it, though. He'd be like, No,
I think that's something he'll agree on.
It's like the nicest guy.
He saw me play. Yeah. He watched me play and just kind of go, what made you think of that? And I was also worse than Will Kennedy.
Oh, man.
Will Kennedy is a great piano player. And I was much worse than him. I might have been a close, even keel with Ricky Lawson. May he rest in peace.
Yeah. I never heard him play piano, but he's a great drummer.
No, but he's a great, Well, definitely better drummer than me. So that, that. But, I can hold the, position of being the worst keyboard player in the Yellow Jackets.
But I had
just enough together to get myself in trouble and write music, on it. Yeah. So
I'm also a pretty terrible keyboard player, but when I was more active writing music for television and film and stuff like that, you have to do it.
So I
hunt and peck a little bit, you know. It's like someone typing when they really don't know how to type. They do it with one finger, you know.
But
I know where everything is. I just suck kind of. With MIDI, I'm a very good, I'm a good engineer. So I can move things around when I mess up, you know. That's basically
You can punch in, you can fix stuff.
And I can also hire.
We're okay.
Yeah. I can also hire like a real pianist when it's out of my wheelhouse, you know.
Exactly. that's what I would do. I would hunt and peck for things for weeks, and I'd come up with what I thought might be a pretty solid idea, and I'd bring it over to Russ.
Yeah.
Because we wrote a lot of music. And Russ would look at it, and he'd listen, and then he'd kind of just play. And he'd make it like five times better than anything I would do. Yeah. And we would end up collaborating on a nice piece of music. So
that's cool.
That was a learning experience. And it gave me confidence to continue, even though I suck.
Doesn't matter. If it's from a creative standpoint.
Yeah, that's
really
all it was.
That's
all it was.
It's a tool for that stuff.
I've actually written over 400 tunes because of
that's
it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
I think it's maybe harder for you because you play the piano upside down, you know?
I do. Yeah, I have to kind of do a handstand.
Upright piano, but not
that's
what
right.
you think.
I was completely upside down.
It's like, no, it's not just the bass. I do it. I feel that everything is better upside down. I play saxophone upside down.
It's a whole nother, complete different way of looking at the instrument.
You can see this guy's sandwiches.
Exactly.
So, and you're going to have fun with that when we finally film our master class or classes. I'm hoping that it's enough information to maybe break it into part one and part two.
What are you thinking about in terms of content for this one?
Well, one thing I thought of was that it would be something that be kind of cool for people that play the way I do, upside down and backwards, using open strings. And it kind of got me working on stuff in that, in this fashion with the open strings, because I used to fool around on guitar and I had this kind of like folk guitar kind of thing going on, and I just applied that to the bass.
Oh,
and
cool.
Started going like, well, this could be something. And I, for years, been messing with it, and I've come up with some funny little patterns and phrases and things that can open the door harmonically for some other ways, some maybe unique ways of getting from point A to point B, you know, using them as fills or as transitional little phrases. So
yeah,
that's kind of the bottom line of what it's about. And then I'm going to try to get into some deeper detail about it, which getting all that together for you. So when we do this, I can hopefully explain myself in an articulate way.
Oh, you're,
I'm just trying to think, because sure, you still do, it's still standard tuning, right? But you're just upside down.
Yeah,
it's just upside down. So I've been working, I'm going to probably do it on six string.
Yep.
Because what's cool is that, you know, when you have that open C string on top, it really does give you that kind of folky guitar kind of stuff on some, and some things, and other things it's just some riffing and, you know, patterns and phrases and you know, connective tissue things that you can come up with to link, like, you know, like if you're playing a tune and you want to get from the A section to the B section, you can explode into this little phrase with open strings and you go, wow, that's interesting, that's a different way of getting to the next section, you know. So
yeah, man.
So that is stuff like that. And there's, I did a pretty crazy little study on exactly what I was doing. I picked three key centers to kind of start the process, because you can do it all the way up and down the whole neck, but I just picked three key centers to just look at those three keys, and that's how sort of I started working on this stuff. And then I, more and more I did it, I started realizing I could do stuff all over the neck like this. So
yeah,
but that gets really advanced, and it's experimental as well, you know. It's an experimental way, and it's improvisational, so it's like, it's got all these things to it that I think are kind of cool.
Well, you've always had your own sound, you know, and a lot of that is, you know, it's always from you, but a lot of that is also because of what you're presented with, right? I mean, the upside, it's, and we talked about it on the video. You said, you know, it's not always beneficial to play upside down. Like, people think I have an advantage or something.
It's
like
not,
that.
Yeah.
It's just the way it worked out.
So, yeah. So, it's like hours of experimenting and improvisationally playing things to find stuff that's comfortable. And that's the other thing I talk about, is like, anything you do like this, it doesn't even just have to be what I'm going to explain. It could be anything. You know, to experiment and improvise with stuff and finding your own natural way around stuff. Then it's almost like a no-brainer. You just do things that come naturally to you, and people, you know, anybody will go, wow, what did you just do?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's something that you came up with. It's your own thing that somebody else would have to learn, you know, but you don't even have to learn it. You just do it, you know?
No, it's
like
beautiful.
Alan Holdsworth. He did a lot of things like that.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He made a Bible of that stuff.
He did. He's
one of those guys. May he rest in peace.
I miss him.
Yeah,
a lot. Oh, I should also say one thing,
please.
If I could plug this,
you got to plug everything. Yes.
Yeah, I plug everything. I had two solo projects that were just dead in the water. One was called Red Heat, which I originally did for a label called Unitone. And that came out in the early 90s. And then in the early 2000s, about almost 10 years later, I did another solo project that was released completely self-released and unceremoniously so. But was something I did. And both of those featured Jovanelli on keyboards, and they've been re-released on the Blue Canoe label. So,
oh, great.
So nice. Brand new. It just came out in June.
Works out.
Well, you know, Jimmy, thanks so much for being on. I appreciate you taking some time out of your super busy schedule. I don't know how you do it. I have no energy, and I just have a four-year-old, and I'm working here.
That takes a lot of energy.
Yeah, it does, but you did that too. And now, you know, and now you're producing I believe it was 3,500 records next week or something.
Yeah, 3,500. Yeah. It's 12 to be exact.
Playing
a dozen. It was a baker's dozen. I was doing 13, but I finished. That one's finished off the table. And there's a three more that'll be off the table, I think, this week or next week.
All right.
Well, and that's I produced a bluegrass band out of Austin, Texas.
Oh, cool.
Named the Big Fan of the Bison. We go look for that.
Yeah.
That'll be coming out at some point. Produced this really cool ethnic fusion band with electric guitar player Dewa Bujana from Jakarta.
I don't know.
An acoustic fretless guitar player from Switzerland who lives in London named Nicholas Meyer.
Wow.
A drummer from Israel who also lives in England named Asaf Circus. Mm-hmm. And a suling player, which is a wooden flute from Borneo. His name is Sat Saya. So it's a quintet. Yeah.
Nice. That's
coming out on Blue Canoe.
Right. So everything you're doing is kind of like the same genre. No, I'm just kidding.
No, it's a little different. Yeah.
I'm going to text my uncle. Is it Blue Canoe with it's just canoe, right? C-A-N-O-E.
Yeah, just like a regular canoe. C-A-N-O-E.
Yeah.
But it sounds cool. It sounds like all these projects are so different that'll keep you up, you know? I mean, that'll keep you.
Yeah.
It's just, that's interesting. I mean,
I will mention one thing that's in progress that I'm really getting excited about. Mm-hmm. And I put together a collaborative project with Art Trio, which is a trio that I did a record with, and co-produced with Scott Kinsey, and that's Scott Kinsey on keyboards and Gergo Borlai on drums.
Right.
With also, we got Vinny Kaluta and Gary Novak on a couple of tracks, and also Steve Taglioni and Judd Miller on some tunes. So the basic Art Trio, which is Scott and Gergo and myself, are the rhythm section for a big band project that's going to feature the John DeVersa Big Band.
Oh, nice.
And it's all the music of a composer from Bremen, Germany named M.S. Schmidt, Michael Schmidt. Yeah, M.S.M. Schmidt, M.S.M. Schmidt. And nice. It's got a little ways to go yet, but it's definitely, like maybe I'd say about 55% finished. So
that's
it's got
exciting.
A little ways to go, but yeah. And I'm going to have some nice guests on there, guest soloists, and, really excited about that. So it's like a fusion big band record.
Man, I want to check that out. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
I'll get you copies of all that stuff. So.
I prefer cassettes. I don't know if you could just, you know, just send as many. Yeah.
I could try to get you that.
No, not at all. I'm easy. But thanks so much, Jimmy. You know, again, pleasure to have you on. You know, great wise words. Very, very cool guy. An amazingly talented musician. And, you know, you deserve all the work. You know, I'm happy that... You know, it's not a shock, but I'm happy that you're working. I'm on the phone and email back and forth with our artist roster. And, you know, we have a lot of great musicians on the site, and, some of them
great
are
musicians.
Better shape than others. You know, it's just a bad time. So I'm really happy that you're working and that the things are going okay.
I pray that everyone stays safe and, I'm going to do everything I can to help as many musicians as I can at this time. So.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Jimmy, and we will talk.
Thanks for having me on your show.
All right.
Yeah. Good to see you.
All right.
Questions, comments, episode ideas, hate mail? You can get in touch with us by contact form, email, or voicemail, all of which are available at our website, theperformancepathway.com. If one of your questions or topics makes it into the podcast, with your consent, of course, you'll receive a shiny new $10 gift card for use at mymusicmasterclass.com. That's our sister website, which contains over 600 original educational videos from your musical heroes. So look forward to hearing from you.